From the island jewel, the island-chained nation of New Zealand, in the sunny slave South Pacific, Fukushima irradiated with love, gingerly sprinkled by chemtrails which mix with the freshly potted cannabis plants of illegal growers all over the country and turning a nice, beautiful, slushy, gooey, clear, transparent colour, allegedly, all around the plants. And this has been happening after chemtrail activity, allegedly. Now, speaking of which, climate itself. This is the stated purpose by geoengineers to, spray, what was it, like 300 million tons of aluminium into the world's atmospheres, like per year or something like that. It's quite horrendous, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, the reason they justify this is, oh, global warming. And now what's happening in New Zealand is the government's dumped a national standard for a sea level rise. So basically what they're saying is we're not going to now force all the local governments to plan everything at a central government level, because we don't have a national standard for how high sea levels are going to rise, so we can't plan it the whole country at once. We don't know. And that's what the science proves. We don't know. All we have is estimates that are going into computer models that don't make any sense anyway. Garbage in, garbage out. It's a nerd term. When hackers and programmers and all of that kind of stuff are doing their business, garbage in, garbage out is a commonly used phrase, because it doesn't matter how sophisticated your computer program at predicting or whatever is, if you've got crap information going into it to give it the parameters, you will have crap information coming out of it telling you what its conclusions are. It's just that simple. However, what's happened now is because people are actually becoming active as a result of this and lobbying their local councils about climate change, they are being called conspiracy deniers, climate deniers or climate skeptics. And let me see. There are two major problems here. The current guidance numbers, first published in 2009, are increasingly out of line with the latest research, and the lack of a national standard means that climate skeptics can waste time and ratepayer money by forcing planning authorities to adjudicate on their minority views, i.e. the perspective of climate change cultists, as I've called them. They call us skeptics, I'll call them cultists. I'm skeptical. That's true. You're supposed to question stuff and have science. You know, that's what the scientific method is skepticism. These people don't have any. Okay? So I'm perfectly happy with being called a climate skeptic, just as long as they are quite happy to be called a climate cultist, because that's precisely what they are. Because they are forcing a majority viewpoint on the minority. Is that freedom? No, that's tyranny. Whenever anybody forces anybody's views on anybody and tells everybody, no, you can't listen to them, that's a taboo topic. That's not freedom. These people are freedom-hating cultists. It's as simple as that. So whenever they're trying to tell you can't have your say, whenever you think about biting your tongue, don't. Because they're wrong and you're right and you have nothing to fear from people who are wrong. My very special guest today, I think, is Dr. Tracy. Welcome to the program. Tracy, are you there? We seem to be having some problems with the phones. We may have to reconnect her. I hope she didn't hang up or something. Tracy, can you hear me? We're having some problems here. Okay. Tracy, can you speak up, please?
Can you hear me?
Now I can.
Okay.
Right, welcome to the show. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do? Because all I know so far is that you're Dr. Tracy and you've written some book about pharmaceuticals, which is a fairly minute viewpoint. I don't know anything about who you are, and I'd like to know.
I've spent the last 20-plus years trying to wake the world up to what antidepressants are really doing instead of what pharmaceutical companies are telling us what they're doing. And I've written a book just by gathering as much information as I can about these drugs to put out to the public. And I also have started an organization called the International Coalition for Drug Awareness. We focus on dangerous prescription meds. There's a period of time after a drug is approved before it is then pulled from the market when we begin to realize how many problems it has, that people are actually really guinea pigs. I mean, we've seen that with so many different drugs, the Fenfin and Redux, Lyox, some of the biggest lawsuits in the history of the United States were filed over those drugs because people took them during that period of time after approval and before we really woke up to how deadly the drugs were, and many lost their lives as a result. And so we're trying to cover that period, and the most popular drugs on the market, prescription drugs, have been antidepressants. So I have fought very hard to get the truth out about these drugs. And
you know what's scary just about that statement is that we talked about the popularity of drugs, like it's the popularity of cigarettes or alcohol. I mean, is there a lot of use that's going on that's recreational?
Oh, yes. There has been from the very, very beginning. Kids have been using these drugs for recreational drugs. I mean, as soon as I started this 20 years ago, the little girl from across the street that was about 13 at the time told me that you could buy Prozac at school for $5 a pill. So it's clear that they've been using it for a long, long time that way.
But it was
when you look at how they work, you really do understand why they would do that. And that's because we have seen serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which is what these drugs are called, in the past. These serotonergic drugs in the past, we now call them LSD and PCP. Ecstasy is another one. So these drugs are very, very similar to some of the street drugs that are out there now. And those drugs were introduced as prescription drugs. LSD was patented by the same company who gave us Prozac and started the antidepressants here in the U.S. So...
Well, ecstasy, my brother told me a story one time. You know how people refer to it as E, and they think E means ecstasy? Well, Apparently, back in the day, the drug they came up with, they called it empathy. And it was prescribed for situations where they had really bad family violence at the part of the father or something like that. He'd take a dose of this E, go home to his kids. And because when you're on E, if you've ever tried it, you love everything and you intensely listen and you're very emotionally engaged. And when you touch things, they feel extra soft and everything's so much nicer. So what they found was it was incredibly effective. These men would go home and instead of beating their wives after a night on the drink, they'd wind up cuddling them and listening to them and caring about them, and they'd never hit them again.
Yeah, I wonder how long that lasts. Anyway, that one was pulled from the market 5 years before Prozac was introduced, obviously, to make the way for the new group of drugs, who knows. But these drugs, what they do is they're more like anesthetics. PCP was put out as a dissociative anesthetic, where the brain goes, but the body can continue to move so that the doctor can move the patient around the way he wants. direct them to move. And
different from Thorazine.
That is really a problem. You don't want somebody who's brain dead moving around. So when you look at what's really happening here, I don't know if you've ever heard of a condition called a REM sleep behavior disorder.
Not heard of it, I'm sorry.
Where you actually have horrifying nightmares and act them out. 80% of those that go into the REM sleep behavior disorder are actually hurting themselves or someone else. It's a very, very dangerous disorder. And we now know, I've been clamoring about this for almost 20 years, we now know that these drugs are found in 86% of the cases being diagnosed with that REM sleep behavior disorder. When I testified to the FDA in 2004, I mentioned a case in Connecticut where a mother, in fact, I believe she was a nurse, had recently had a baby and been put on an antidepressant. And so she ended up getting up in the middle of the night, stabbing her husband to death, the new baby, everyone else in the family. The little 8-year-old girl is the only one that survived. Somehow she got out of the house and ran to the neighbors and stood there bleeding on their front porch, screaming, "Help, help, mommy's having a nightmare." And I said, is it going to have to be out of the mouths of babes that we finally begin to understand what's really happening to these people in these cases? And that little girl understood that her mother never would have done such a thing unless she was having a nightmare. And that's literally what's happening.
And so this is a drug reaction.
Yes, it's a definite.
So a drug
reaction.
Can actually, while people are in an REM state, the drug causes a reaction to cause the body to take itself out of that kind of sleep state, the catatonic state, and to act out what the REM sleep dream state is telling it.
Yes. In fact, it's the elevated serotonin that produces the nightmares, and then they believe that it may be overstimulating the brainstem so that you don't have the paralysis during sleep, which is what REM sleep behavior disorder is. In the past, it was known mainly as a drug withdrawal state, which is really frightening because then you look at the fact that 86% of the cases being diagnosed are someone taking an antidepressant. So how much higher is that going to be in the withdrawal? Nobody's looked at that yet. But I can tell you that the withdrawal from an antidepressant can trigger that very quickly, which is why you want to avoid withdrawal. And I have got a CD that goes for an hour and a half detailing the safest way to get off of these drugs, so that you don't start going into the withdrawal and subject yourself to the possibility of going into that horrible REM sleep behavior state.
What if you just start piling in heaps of nice raw greens and veggies and doing carrot juice every day and all of that kind of stuff and go running while you're taking the medication? I mean, would it... do the medications react to good food or something?
Oh, definitely. And you will do far, far better doing exactly what you just said. People who go on to the raw food do very well, and coming off of the drug, they have very little problem as opposed to someone who does not do that. And that may be because the way these drugs work is by destroying enzymes. They destroy the enzymes that break down serotonin so that serotonin will begin to build up in the brain. So So if you can replace those enzymes with raw food, certainly you should do much better.
Well, we should hope so. And anybody who wants to look at some of the benefits of raw food and all that sort of such, I just uploaded a video to my YouTube channel this morning. Malcolm Harker, MalcolmHarker, Master Herbalist, speaks out. And he's cured some incredible conditions just with natural herbal remedies. It's quite amazing. Now, I was wondering, and this is the reason why raw foods actually work for you much better than, say, mineral-based supplements, because they're actually based off an artificial or a mineral, for example. Now, when you're going from foods to blood, basically, you're trying to essentially translate magnesium, which is green. That's the chlorophyll molecule of the plants, the vegetable sap, that kind of stuff. And it's built in almost an exact same way. The center of the atom is magnesium, but the other atoms that are floating around it are exactly the same as your iron-based blood cells. Okay? Nitrogen, oxygen, hydrogen, carbon. And your body can transmute that vegetable matter into beautiful, clear, new blood, which will flush out all of the bad stuff in your body. So eat your raw foods, man. Really, really good for you. Dr. Tracy, we'll be right back after the break in just a few minutes.
Bonkers.
In my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless I let you give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back. Gentlemen, listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And if you were friggin' nuts, you might be crazy enough to go and see a psychiatrist who doesn't care about your condition whatsoever, but is very, very keen on making that $5,000 bonus for getting you on a prescription of about 13 different medications, the first of which will have a side effect, which will be counted by the second one, but it'll also have another side effect, which will be counted by the third one, of course, which will have another side effect, which is counted by the fourth one, until eventually, who knows, you'll be on 50 psychoactive medications within a month. I'm just joking. It's not that bad. It's probably worse, because it's happening on a mass scale, and it's happening to everybody everywhere, and people swallow it, like, quite literally, don't they? They don't even question it. Oh. Doctor says it's good for me. You got a white coat. I have no idea what the heck goes on inside my own body, so I'm basically just a victim waiting to happen. You know, the old customary, oh, there's a sucker born every minute type mentality. You know, how people use other people and just hurt them and destroy them and rip them off and steal money and cause immense amounts of damage and havoc and destroy the local economy and trust in the community. That kind of thing. That's what's going on here on a mass scale. To everybody through the pharmaceutical industry and, of course, many other machinations of the military-industrial complex. Dr. Tracy is my guest. Do you ever, like, is Dr. Tracy your full name? I presume you've got others. Like a Christian name and a surname and what have you. Tracy, are you there? Tracy, you can speak up now. I think I heard her hang up. Okay. We're having some strange technical difficulties today. So anyway, back on the whole pharmaceutical question, if you'd like to call in, ladies and gentlemen, I think the phone lines will now be open. And if we get Tracy back, I think we can probably take some callers as well. And she's apparently been on Coast to Coast as well. A regular, in fact.
quite a prestigious person we've got on here. And here's another side of the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, look, they come at you from every angle because they got the doctors, they got the medical schools. What are the schools of dentistry funded by? Colgate. What are the schools of medicine funded by? What are all the research projects funded by? What are all the psychiatric institutions funded by? Same pharmaceutical companies, all producing different products all over the place. If it goes into your body or has anything to do with you or your survival or your health or the lack thereof, they basically have something to do with it. Okay? And this includes at governmental level. Lobbying. Have a look at the list of people who have been employees of major pharmaceutical companies, or Monsanto for that matter, and then wound up on the approval boards of the Food and Drug Administration. It's unbelievable. Have a look at how many financial connections the people at the boards of the drug approval panels have. Every single one of them. And that's most of the time. Most of the time, every single one of them has at least one tie to pharmaceutical companies. You know, like, for example, they'll get paid 50 Gs to go to a university, a prestigious university, and give a speech about how fabulous drugs are and how this new drug's going to cure friggin' everything. When, if you look at the statistical diagnostics of any test subject anywhere in any way at any time, at no point has a psychoactive drug cured anybody of anything because there's nothing to cure. If you're acting a little bit wobbly or whatever, have a look at what you're eating. You know, Michael J. Fox, what did he do? Sponsored Diet Coke? Oh, Parkinson's.
That'll get you with the aspartame, you twitchy freak.
You know, this kind of stuff is real evil, man, and it affects everybody everywhere in real horrible, horrific ways that you wouldn't even conceive. It's darned interesting and terrifying at the same time. Tracy, are you there at all, by chance? No? AFR, can we get her back on the phone or hang it down and bring it back up again, perhaps? That'd be lovely. Because when you have a look at the rap sheets of these pharmaceutical companies, you notice straight away there is not a skerrick, not even a slight blush of moral ethic that goes into these people, which is convenient because their entire business practice is based on the practice of fraud, which requires no moral standing in the community in order to fulfill that role. Does it? Kind of like being in the mafia. And, the thing is, the mafia kills a hell of a lot less people. The mafia has a code. Pharmaceutical companies don't. If it costs you $50 million in fines to make $500 million of profit, it's only good business practice to continue doing so as far as they're concerned. So what if there's 10,000 people a year that, goodness knows what. In fact, the numbers could be astronomically more. Because what about reporting? Okay, because a lot of people don't know when their loved ones just suddenly hangs themselves after being on a couple of psychoactive drugs for a couple of weeks or something like that, or jumps off a bridge or commits some other kind of suicide or homicide or whatever. They didn't read the reactions rap sheet. They didn't know that they might go off and bloody kill themselves because the psychiatrist told them that this drug was perfectly safe and there's no side effects. I went into a mental ward, I think, here in New Zealand to see a friend of mine who'd gotten himself locked in there. And they had him on these two drugs. And his psychiatrist was this, he's taller than me. Gargantuan, but lanky and very effeminate. You know the kind of thing. Yes, yeah. I'm going to look down on everybody because I have a doctorate for a scientific degree that doesn't actually use any science, which means I have a degree in BS. You know, that's what a Bachelor of Science is. Bachelor of Science, BS. There you go. But except there's not... It's almost like science doesn't exist in psychiatry. I asked this guy, what's the known side effects for these two drugs? I don't know. They had like 14 different syllables or something. It'd be unbelievable. And he says, oh, well, you know, maybe a little bit of weight loss or maybe slight dizziness. So really, is that all? And he's like, well, you'll have to check up the things for yourself. And from that second, I was just like, you've read this and you're lying. You're picking the only two. I went and I Googled these names and I had a look for the side effects online from the official website. There is a list of side effects that are so horrific that you wouldn't give these to prisoners of war. People go get debilitating stomach cramps. They get completely dizzy. They vomit. They get diarrhea. They get liver failure, kidney failure, a brain hemorrhaging, heart arrhythmia, psychotic episodes, hallucinations. And it goes on and on and on. And I texted these symptoms to my mate while he's in there. And I had to fill up two whole long texts full of just the really bad symptoms, because there's a whole list of other stuff that are just like, what? I didn't even know they could exist. And he texts me back. He says, bro, I've got all of them. and these are the drugs they're supposed to keep him happy. Why did they drug him in the first place? What was their diagnosis? Quote, he had an elevated mood and appeared to be happy. Oh, the tyranny. See, this is eugenics. This is evil. This is the scumbaggery that I'm talking about all the time. It's right there in front of your face. They take the people who have absolutely nothing to call upon, the people who have been put into a mental institution. Nobody listens to them. They're not allowed to make phone calls that aren't monitored, etc., etc. It is a victimization holding pen, not entirely dissimilar from a prisoner of war camp. And Tracy, I think you're back, are you?
Yes, I've been trying to greet you. Sorry. I hit the wrong button.
All right. Well, I've always found that when you try to communicate with somebody, try and find out which is the right button before you start.
Sorry. Well,
I mean, and the president, this is the first lesson the president gets at the Oval Office, incidentally. It's like, now remember, Mr. President, if you want to make a phone call to the Prime Minister of the Uber Kingdom over there, you want to push this button, not that one.
Stay away from that red one.
Yeah. But he's like, oh, come on. Well, maybe if I just send one nuclear warhead over to the city of London, it might help the world's economy.
Yeah, really. That's why they send most of them anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's another show.
It is. Well, Tracy, what would you like to talk about? Because you've been on, as far as I know, umpteen different radio shows and TV shows and all of this, that, and the other. You've been in the business for a long time. You've got 25 years of experience and knowledge. And essentially, I don't want to waste your time by taking you in a direction that you don't want to go. So okay. What I want to know is, what do you really, really love talking about? What would you really want everybody to know? Importantly,
why don't we start from the very beginning, because your listeners probably haven't heard this.
the whole theory behind these drugs, and everybody's heard this much by now, is that if you're depressed, you have low levels of serotonin. That is the biggest serotonin lie ever. If you read the research, you find out that what you have is not low levels of serotonin. You have low levels of serotonin metabolism. Guess what serotonin reuptake is? That is serotonin metabolism. So when you inhibit the serotonin metabolism, you're actually causing depression. And they're literally admitting that and telling you what the name of the drug, the type of drug it is anyway. Because a serotonin reuptake inhibitor, as I said, inhibits the metabolism of serotonin. You want to increase the metabolism of serotonin. You don't want to decrease it. Because we've known forever. I mean, Dr. Felix Suhlman in Israel was one of the first researchers, and he found that people that couldn't metabolize serotonin suffered from all kinds of things, like migraines, hot flashes, pains around the heart, difficulty breathing, a worsening of bronchial complaints. It went on and on and on. And then as you look at additional research, you find that it is found in psychosis or schizophrenia, mood disorders, autism, Alzheimer's, organic brain disease, mental retardation, reckless driving, impulsive behavior with no concern for punishment, insomnia, violent nightmares, substance abuse. The first thing I saw with these drugs was an overwhelming craving for alcohol. You get suicide, anxiety, depression, violence, hostility, argumentative behavior, divorce. Boy, does that happen quick. Anyway, the list is just horrendous. Nothing that anybody would want to take something for that would be therapeutic in nature anyway. But we have a whole new vocabulary in our society since these drugs hit the market. We've got road rage. We've got murder-suicide. We've got school shootings. They've given us a whole new world. And we've got murder-suicides where entire families are wiped out all the time.
Yep, exactly. It's like the 21st century version of Aladdin. A whole new world full of murder-suicides. All the drugs are coming through every orifice, and there's nowhere to hide. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back with Dr. Tracy. Please don't desert me.
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time, it's business time.
It's business, it's business time.
That's what you mean it's business time.
It's business, it's business time.
Business time, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. Oh yeah.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the sexiest 2 hours in talk radio, and it happens 5 days a week. In fact, I was just reading an interesting article the other day. In fact, no, I can't mention that on FCC-regulated radio. My very special guest is Dr. Anne Blake Tracy, PhD. Welcome back.
Thank you. I should probably give you some websites, too.
Might be an idea worthy of merit.
Our website is drugawareness.org, where you'll find a lot of this information that I'm giving you. You can find my testimonies before the FDA with all that information. And I do talk about all of the female school teachers that are seducing the male students, because I don't think I saw one of those cases ever before without these drugs. And now the have I found one case yet that didn't involve them? I don't think so. But anyway.
You know what? That's one of the interesting things. All of these real crazy things that happen in society that I see, real brutal murders or stuff that an ordinary person just would stop themselves from doing. You know, we all have those urges, but none of us ever actually do it. Those kind of things, every single time I see it, pharmaceutical drug involved. Every time.
That's right. And you don't know how hard it is to get that into the press. I mean,
it's impossible.
Crazy to get that out. When Columbine happened, it was a good week, and if the neighbor hadn't spoken up, we may not have ever known that the drugs were involved in Columbine. But, you know, it's just, you look at our database, which is at ssristories.com, samstories.com. Anyway, the SSRIStories.com has a whole database of almost 5,000 cases that just two of us have gathered over 20 years. So, you know, it's only the very, very tip of the iceberg. And case after case of school shootings. We had one case where a little 14-year-old girl and her 10-year-old brother stabbed their 7-year-old brother to death and buried him out back. Both of the children were on Paxil. I could go on and on and on and on and on and on and on with the cases. They just are unending. Just brutal, brutal crime. And these were done by people who never would have done such a thing, according to those who know them. But when you look at the fact that they're acting out nightmares, it would be something that would be the totally opposite of anything you would ever expect, because that would be their worst fear. The worst thing that they could ever dream of. Rusty Yates will tell you in a heartbeat that Andrea Yates, the Texas mother, the nurse that drowned her 5 children, that was her very worst nightmare. She walked away from her nursing career so that she could spend all of her time with her children, because she had them a little bit later in life. I think she was in her mid-30s when she started, and wanted to devote all of her time to her children.
She had a nightmare and acted it out.
Yeah. That's right. No one is more shocked by their behavior than the person who has done it. I've often said that when Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold reached the other side, they turned around and looked back and said, "We did what?
We did sweet freckle."
It's just so sad. So sad.
You know what? And this is another thing that I feel needs to be touched on. The sadness and, basically just hearing about this information, even if it doesn't happen to you, is traumatic in itself. I'm acting under the assumption that you've experienced quite a lot of challenges emotionally just trying to face and research this kind of information.
You know, it's been pretty hard to even take the time to get into all the emotions of it. There are times it does get to me, but I know that if I stop, more people are going to die. It's kind of like being at the front of a battle and people dying around you. You can't stop, because you know that if you do, you're not going to get where it is that you have to go. And every time I hear of another death, it just makes me sick. Or someone that comes back and says, "Thank you, you've saved my life," You know, I don't know what I would have done had I not found out when I did. It's a double-edged sword because I think of how many didn't hear in time. So, yeah, that part's really hard. I have often called this a national holocaust, but several years ago we started calling it an international holocaust because everyone's been affected everywhere. Look at the Crown Prince of Nepal. On antidepressants, he wiped out the entire royal family in a mass shooting and then killed himself. And it's everywhere, and it doesn't matter what your status in life is. Look at Princess Di and the hell she went through on the drugs. And here I thought the drugs were going to kill her. Instead, it was somebody else on Prozac that drove her to her death. When I came out, Andre Paul's blood alcohol level was 3 times the limit. I picked up the phone and called the police in Paris and said, okay, you've got a man that has 3 times the legal limit of alcohol. You got his family saying you've got a wrong blood sample because this man didn't drink. And yet he apparently had been drinking so much that he was on a drug like Anabuse to stop him from drinking. That is overwhelming compulsion for alcohol, which spelled Prozac for me. And I said, you need to look for Prozac because that's what keeps the drunk on their feet and going when they should be passed out. And sure enough, a week later, they said, we have a driver on Prozac. People have got to wake up to what these drugs are doing. It's simple math. People read through my book and they say, oh my gosh, I can see these cases anywhere and everywhere. It's so easy to detect which ones they are. But what's so sad, Vinny, is they're everywhere. These drugs come through your back door and touch you in your life, no matter who you are. It's just astounding to see. And I just visited my sister and her oldest daughter learned about this from me years ago as she saw friends go through it. And they just had her and her husband's best friend that committed suicide this last year. And I had asked if he was on anything. You know, they hadn't asked. They hadn't known. She said, she just told me last week, she said, yes, I just found out that he was on one of these antidepressants. But they'd been so torn up about it. Now she has some answers. People need to know these people are not choosing to die. They are not making that choice. This is literal murder. It's using a pill instead of a bullet to get them to do the job for you. But this is murder. These companies knew before they put these drugs out what they did.
Has anyone ever charged a psychiatrist who prescribed a dangerous drug and didn't tell the person about the side effects per se, right, with, I don't know, accessory to murder?
No, but you know, when the first boy shot at Columbine testified to the FDA, he said these drugs are accessories to murder.
Yeah.
He laid it right on the line, and there were several of the panel, the FDA panel, that came down and shook his hand and thanked him for his testimony. And he just blasted the FDA. He said, where were you? Why weren't you protecting I and my friends at Columbine that day? Why weren't you doing your job? If you had been, you know, this would not have happened to us.
Well, you know what? all these horrible reactions also provide a convenient smokescreen for the government to start taking everybody's rights off them as well, you know. Oh, there's dangerous people out there. Now we've got to have checkpoints everywhere because those dangerous people might be driving drunk or stoned or worse or something, right. Or something bad might be happening. Well, you know, well, perhaps we need to screen all your children in your school system to hopefully we'll be able to catch them to see if they might be suicide prone, and then we'll put them on a drug that will make them commit suicide and say, thank goodness we caught them while they were young. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Dr. Anne Blake Tracy, PhD. We'll be right back taking your calls after the break. 218-339-8525. Back in just a few minutes. Is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, live from the future, live from New Zealand, the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland is where we broadcast from 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, bringing on the most amazing, fabulous, educated, and darn tootin' somewhat debonair guests onto the show, like Dr. Anne Blake Tracy, PhD. And we've got a caller here, Dr. Anne, so let's just bring him on up here. Joe in LA, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Yeah, somewhat fabulous.
Great. I had a question for the doctor. I had a friend a few years back commit suicide. Someone who I didn't think would do such a thing because he had two boys that he really loved. He was taking a lot of painkillers, in particular Vicodin. Do you think that drug could have the same kind of reaction that you're describing here as far as having a suicide reaction?
Dr. Tracy, are you there? You got to get that button clicked. Anne, are you there?
You're right.
Oh, there she is.
Sorry. Yes, painkillers are serotonergic drugs. And they can't produce the same thing, and you can get a real synergistic effect if they give you an antidepressant with a painkiller. And painkillers will often cause depression, which leads to them prescribing an antidepressant. Are you sure he wasn't given an antidepressant as well?
I don't think he was. I think he was basically he became addicted to it. He was a good friend of mine, a drummer in a band. And he was taking, he said, when he told a friend of ours, he was up to like, you know, over 20,000 milligrams a day or some large number. And then he went to the doctors, and the doctors basically told him that he should probably check himself into a rehab center and wean himself off, but he decided to go cold turkey, and then it was soon after that that he took his life.
Yep. In fact, with the antidepressants, the FDA has warned that any abrupt change in dose, whether you're going up or down, so even skipping a pill can cause suicide, hostility, or psychosis. That same warning, in my opinion, should be on the painkillers.
Yeah, my mom was recently, she has disabilities like arthritis, and she sometimes goes through depression, and her doctor had prescribed her some antidepressants, and I looked at the warning label, and it just doesn't make any sense to me that they prescribe something that may cause suicide to people who are depressed, and that was one of the side effects. So I told her not to take it, and she hasn't taken them, but it's infuriating to see that the industry is doing this on purpose, knowing what it can do to people, and
they have the perfect cover as well.
because when the person does commit suicide, they can just blame it on the depression and say, oh, we just didn't get to them in time.
Yep, that's right. We have an internal memo from Eli Lilly in the very beginning, and it's been used in court cases where they were approached by their own doctors, their own researchers, that said, hey, wait a minute, we've got a real problem here, because it appears that Prozac itself is causing suicide. You know what they were told? They were told to get it, to blame it on the patient, because if Lilly lost Prozac, the company would go bankrupt. They'd go out of business. They'd bank too much on Prozac, and they couldn't afford to lose the drug. So they said blame it on underlying depression.
Astonishing, too, hearing reports that certain government agencies want to put lithium and another type of drugs into the drinking water because, you know, so supposedly society's more stressed out. And it's almost if we can't charge the doctors, or at least the pharmaceutical companies that are knowingly distributing this with, you know, murder, you should probably get some sort of class action suit for gross negligent homicide or something to that effect, because, like you said, this is a genocide and it's really disgusting. But I'm here at work, so I have to get back to work. I just wanted to see if your opinion on what happened to my friend. I appreciate all your great work.
I would say it probably was drugs, especially the abrupt withdrawal from them.
Yeah. Okay. And on that note, we've got Tim in Wisconsin calling in, and this is a topic you and I have personally discussed, isn't it, Tim? About your medication. So yeah, say hello. Tim, are you there?
Yeah. I didn't hear you coming in. I wanted to tell this guest. I wanted to tell this guest my situation that I told on another show, and that is that I ended up getting a panic attack problem that I had a long time ago, and I was really trying to, you know, get things going better enough money wise, you know, to afford you know, some natural stuff called Bliss from a company called Market America before I ended up, you know, getting, to a point where, you know, ended up getting where a psychiatrist doctor, you know, started, you know, trying to get me on medication. And, the one that I got put on lately is clonazepam, and I know it's one that from a long time ago I'd have to make sure not to miss any dose. I forgot one time here and there a long time ago, and did have withdrawal seizures a few times. And when this psychiatrist doctor, when she asked me about you know, going on Paxil, I for sure told her that I didn't want to do that one, because of even what I seen and heard of about that one on TV commercials,
right,
where they say you might have that you may have but you might have this side effect and that side effect and that side effect, and then there's another medication I forgot to say about the stuff, the natural stuff called Bliss. She was, telling me that, that there wasn't enough, she didn't find enough, studies on that. Like, as if she's, was able to find more studies on something, on a drug called, I'm not sure if it's called the citalopram or something like that.
Citalopram?
It is pronounced something like that. I forgot for sure how it was.
Soliloquiopram.
And she had the papers on that one of information on that one, and she was, you know, trying to tell me that drug Reed did the same thing about the same thing as the natural stuff, the natural herbal stuff called Bliss and I thought there was something else I was going to say about that. This started to slip my mind.
Well, you're breathing pretty heavy on the phone there, mate. Are you out of breath or something? Did you rush in to make this call?
No. Oh, I may have accidentally breathed on the phone for a bit, and I didn't realize I did.
Yep. Was happening somewhere. So
Dr. Tracy, do you want to respond to
it? Go ahead.
Yeah, Celexa is like one of the strongest SSRIs out there.
Tim, are you breathing up the phone here at the moment?
You do have to be very careful also of some of the natural products, because unfortunately the natural health industry has bought into the serotonin hypothesis, which, as I pointed out, is nothing but a lie. And so they're trying to find natural ways to increase serotonin. Well, it doesn't matter whether you're increasing serotonin in a natural way or an unnatural way. You're still making somebody's depression worse. You're making their anxiety worse and everything else that we listed that you find with the elevated serotonin levels. So stay away from St. John's wort. Stay away from 5-HTP, SAMe, any of these other things like that are increasing serotonin levels. You need to look at other herbs that are very beneficial, that are very calming, like the hops, valerian, skullcap combination is very relaxing. There's a product called Calms. Calcium and magnesium are very relaxing. And many people are very low in those after being on these drugs. So you look at things like that instead of, you know, if we just hadn't been sold this bill of goods on this whole hypothesis, you need to go to our website at drugawareness.org and put in Atlantic Monthly. Pull up the issue for Atlantic Monthly titled Lies, Damn Lies, and Medical Science. Came out in November of 2010, and it's excellent. It's an interview with the world's most renowned expert on medical research. He's based out of Greece, but he says both of his parents were MDs, and he's been studying medical research his entire career, and says at this point, things are so bad when it comes to undue influence from the industry on research that he would say 90% of medical research is tainted, bogus, not reliable, and he doesn't know if medical science can recover from that. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not taking my car to a mechanic who's relying on 90% of the information on that car that's incorrect. And yet, we're taking our bodies to doctors who are relying on research that is 90% incorrect. Talk about scary. You've got to become the expert on your own. You got to do the research on your own. If I hadn't done the research on my own, I wouldn't understand all this, because I would have been sold the same bill of goods that everybody else has, which would explain why the largest single group I've got facing horrible reactions to antidepressants are doctors, nurses, psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, and their family members.
It's also something that I believe the entire family needs to be made aware of whenever you're going to be taking any kind of psychiatric medication.
you need to be telling all those people closest to you about any of the warning signs that they might experience. So that if you start to experience, you know, a whole lot of really bad side effects or anything like that, they will know what's happening and be able to.
And from the beginning, doctors have told their patients, lie to everyone about what you're on. Do not tell them you're taking these drugs because they'll try to talk you out of it. Yes. And yet the package inserts say, be sure to have the family watch the patient and report any sudden change in behavior. Because that's how quickly mania can come on with these drugs. And only the people around you are going to catch that.
Yeah.
And yet you still can't get anything done. I've got so many husbands saying, oh my gosh, I don't know who I'm married to anymore. You know, she started on a drug and I woke up to somebody, some stranger in bed with me. I don't know who this person is. My wife is dead, but I don't have a body to bury.
You know what's interesting? It's kind of like, have you studied really deep into this? Is there any kind of like a cult practice, like human sacrifice that's going on at like a higher level? They're like,
we're going to harvest everybody's energy by killing them and making them kill each other and fill the world with darkness and sorrow and terror and murder and blah, 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 blah.
Well, who knows, but I know I called the NRA clear back in 1992 and said, if you do not help me alert the world about these drugs and educate them as to what they're actually doing, they will be the means by which they take America's guns from them.
Because that's an important
if you
point.
Can chemically induce this many people into being violent and they hoard all kinds of weapons because, you know, they have the suicidal ideation and the homicidal ideation listed as side effects. You know what that means? It's not just suicide. It's not just homicide. It's constant ruminating thoughts. That ideation means almost like a compulsion, an obsession with various methods of killing, whether it's yourself or someone else, and just the constant thoughts of killing. So
it implants those killing
horrible
thoughts into a mind. I mean, it really is like demon possession.
Yeah, it is. And most patients I've interviewed say that the only way they could describe it is they felt possessed. I've had atheists tell me that that's the only way they can describe it.
See, and that's why I wondered about the occult side of things, because in satanic practices, telling people the truth is the opposite thing of what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to lie to everybody so that you can keep the truth confined to yourself, so that you can harvest the power off of it, basically, by knowing what's going on, and turn everybody else into subjective servants by keeping them in the dark about very important topics. And it just seems like satanic principles are what seems to be running so much of government agencies and the medical profession today. I just see it like that, at least. Anyway, we'll be right back after the break. Tim, thank you for your call. 218-339-8525. 218-339-8525. Back in a minute.
Broadcasting live from the Kremlin of the USSA.
That's what the country's turned into now. Hey, you know, incidentally, it's come out, and I think it was a mainstream news. It might have been. I forget the headline or anything, but it turns out that the people who set up the police state and all the informants and all the Big Brother measures and everything like that in the United States, all the checkpoints, blah, 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 they were actually paid by Homeland Security to come from Communist Russia. These are the guys who've set it up for Communist Russia, you know, and set it up here.
I mean, you know, they've got the best in the business working on it. They must have paid him a fortune. My very special guest is Dr. Anne Tracy. And also we have a caller, the Greek, one of my favorite callers. Greek, welcome to the program, mate.
Permission to come aboard, Vinny?
Permission granted.
All right. You know, what's interesting is that whenever you look at the side effects of any prescription drug, they never, ever mention what the effects of the, would be on the brain. And this is not, I'm not just talking about the substances that you folks, the subject of the call is, which is essentially a chemical lobotomy. I'm talking about all drugs have an effect on the brain, and they're never, ever mentioned in the side effects.
That's right.
An interesting experiment that I do with people is I have, like, pull out a sheet of paper and have them write or sign their name, and then have them take a sip of just some, you know, sugar-based soda pop, wait about 5 minutes, and then have them write their name next to it or sign their name next to it, and it'll almost appear also did it. That's how fast. And now if you do this with one of your aspartames, it really just shows a personality change and a character change, because the way you write is definitely linked with your character.
Aspartame,
it's a very interesting experiment.
The way you write, did you say, like just with pens or whatever, or are you talking about words on a page, just typing them out?
No. Words on a page. You know, like, for example, you recognize your handwriting, correct? I mean, when I say the way you write, meaning it's just another way of saying handwriting. So
there's another thing that was interesting, because we were talking about demon possession before we came on as a reaction to pharmaceutical drugs, and that's kind of what the experience is like, or maybe even is, who knows. But I was just wondering, because that reminds me of an exorcism that was performed once, where one of the girl who was possessed or something, she was writing in a different language and in different handwriting as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, Benny, I try to stay more on the material aspect of things. The spiritual aspect is just as powerful, if not more. But the thing is, most of the audience, not your audience, but the people on the planet right now, have been so disconnected from the spiritual reality. When you say demon, you know, they always attach it to some Hollywood thing, and they don't understand that. People don't understand that when you read in all of the holy writs, whether it's the Quran or the Bible or the Bhagavad Gita, it says the heavens are inhabited. It's not talking about bacteria in rocks. It's talking about highly evolved societies, billions of them, and also some that are less evolved than us. And they do have the technology to affect us. And fortunately, there is a sort of a quarantine where we're left alone enough to seem so that it appears that we are, you know, exercising our own free will, just like a goldfish in a bowl, let's say. He swims back and forth, but he's still in the bowl, right?
Mm. I just find the... A point that you raise, most people aren't aware of this, because I've always found that term quite paradoxical, the most people, because I've never met most people, and I don't think most people have.
Meaning?
It's kind of difficult to make a judgment call on what everybody knows and what everybody thinks and what everybody reacts kind of thing in a general persuasion, but I suppose you're right, yeah.
Well, here's my point. I could be more specific. Like, if people were actually doing their homework, and I mean like real scientific homework, where you actually, if you read something and it means what it says and says what it means, or you subscribe to something as the basis of, let's say, religion, you would want nothing to do with any of the traditions and cultures that what they're portraying. For example, if you call yourself Christian and you actually read the Bible, you would want nothing to do with anyone, the things Christians do. And the same thing is true for Muslims. If you read the Quran and studied it, you would not go and do the things that they do. And what's interesting, I've approached many of the leaders in many religions with their own text, which is supposedly the basis of their religion, supposedly, allegedly. And they say, oh, no, we don't use that. We go by tradition. And this ties in again to the medical aspect as well. The doctors they would rather sustain themselves financially at the harm of their patients
you know, by issuing many of the things that are being done in the medical industry. So there's a terrible problem, obviously.
This is actually another interesting point. Is the medical industry now a religion?
Absolutely. That's why they wear white robes. Whenever you see on the mainstream
that's true.
Media. Mm-hmm. You see, when you see
And they give sermons, too. And they also tell you to believe in something.
You know, they have a hierarchy. I mean, they have a hierarchy that is installed in an ecclesiastic fashion. And it's called image training.
Hold on a second. Interjection time. Who is the Vatican of the medical industry, then? Who's the one holding all the keys here?
Well, it is the Vatican. You see, years ago, the Vatican would, years ago, when I say years ago, 400 or 500 years ago in Europe, they would send priests going into the villages to take confessions, and then those same priests would come back as judges and accuse and convict and execute the people who they got confessions from. So this new revival of this medical industry would have plenty of cadavers to experiment on. So it's all tied in together. You see, the cardinals wear red because when they slaughtered the child, the blood on the red robe wouldn't shock the audience as much, and the priests wear black when they stoke the fire to throw the child in the fire. You know, the soot would not show that much. And in order to drown out the screams, they installed bells. So you'd be ringing the bells, you see, so the audience would, you know, not really be disturbed by the sounds of the screaming child. And this has all just been powder-coated, and it's all there. It's all... look, if you were actually visiting a planet that based most of its traditions on human sacrifice, what would you go back and say to your superiors if you were sent out as a scout to see what was going on this planet? What would you say?
I'd say the barbecue ribs are good.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just joking again.
Kind of like the beginning of...
cannibalism is frowned on in some cultures. Not New Zealand culture, though.
Well, the word cannibalism, Kahan Baalism, literally means... Kahan means priest, and Baal means Lord. And the Kahan Baals are the priests of the Lord, and that's where you get the word Kahan Baal or cannibal. The same... That's where it literally means the priest of the Lord. So the medical industry is based on that, specifically on the substance... if you do a little bit of research on zombieism, these were arts that were developed where you actually chemically lobotomized and physically trephinated the skull to create a victim that would do your will. And that ties in exactly
like an ego complex.
Yes, master. I will do your bidding. Give me another Zoloft, master.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I think it's at this point. They don't even know what bidding they want them to do.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Anne, what's your take on this? I mean, with the religiosity of the medical system.
Well, you don't want to get me started, but yeah, I do touch on that in my book, and there's an article on the website that I wrote for. There is an article on the website that I wrote that talks about the spiritual aspects as opposed to therapeutic and how that tied in together.
And that's another question.
Actually, 50% of the serotonin is metabolized by the pineal gland. And what's the pineal gland? It's the master gland of the body. It's known as the seat of the soul. If it's metabolizing 50% of the serotonin in your system, you know, what are the chances are if it's totally overloaded, is that connection to God severed? And I believe it is.
Well, this is another thing that I thought was an interesting question to postulate. You know how sometimes people who are addicted to, say, street drugs, for example, they'll go all religious and straight edge and they'll say, Jesus got me off drugs and whatever? Has anybody on Prozac or Zoloft or anything like that gone real religious and managed to get off the drug as a result?
Because the human mind and the spirit is a very powerful thing, and when people believe something, regardless of whether or not it's true, it often gives them the power to do things they ordinarily couldn't.
Well, there is. When somebody goes manic, they often will become very obsessed with religion, think that they're Christ. So, yeah, I guess that could enter in. I don't run into people too often that come off the drugs because of that. But
have you ever ran into one? Because I was just wondering, because the hold of these drugs seems to be like a very, very strong one indeed. In fact, they seem much stronger than street drugs.
Oh, yeah.
And so to get off of them cold turkey would be like a human feat. I mean, to do that and not die would be pretty amazing. Well, we've got Sid in Kentucky calling in. Greg, thank you so much for your call, man.
Always thank you, pleasure, Benny.
Man. Cheers, man. Have a good day.
Benny.
Sid. What's up, Sid?
What a segue, Vinny. What a segue, well, my friend. Are you there?
I am known for a good segue.
Well, let me tell you why. You know my story a little bit. You know, I was on 23 medications, and I got myself off just like that. Just like you said. Oh, I've got to walk away from the radio. I'm sorry, guy. I didn't die. I made it. Okay, I'm a year and a half out. I was 300 pounds at the time. They had me on 23 medications, SSRIs, Celexa, Celebrex, Neurontin. I could go on and on and on. I was their guinea pig. But I was so sick, guys. They were trying anything. He's so sick he's going to die if we don't try something. But here's the deal.
It sounds like they were trying everything.
Well, you know, at some point, Vinny, their everything became everything to kill me. I became very expensive, you know. But that being said, I don't hold any grudges. I don't care anymore. I've got myself well, which is what her point was. Okay? We got to take responsibility for our own health. I go to the gym every day now. I ride a bicycle 10 miles every morning before most people get up.
Good.
Okay? I'm almost 60 years old. Now, guys, look, I was on my deathbed. They had tested me positive for Lyme disease, but it just so happened that at that time frame, Lyme disease didn't happen in my part of the country. But I had the tick I pulled off. I had the bullseye, right? Okay, but that just didn't happen here. And I tested positive for Lyme disease 4 times before a neurosurgeon said, sorry, we're going to treat you. But the damage had been done, and they didn't treat me like they do treat people now, so I probably never got it all out of my system. I had a buddy of mine today tell me I still need to maybe find somebody who believes that you have Lyme disease. I don't go to white coats. I don't know that I'm going to listen to him. I feel fine. You know, I deal with what damage is done. But if I can get somebody's ear that is just starting this, then it's worth it to me to you know, make myself obnoxiously, yeah.
You told me one time that you were in a supermarket and you were telling somebody about how you were on these medications and 300 pounds, and they were, and that a crowd started to gather around you.
Vinny, I talk to everybody about this stuff. I don't care. Look, it changed my life, my friend. It changed everything. I was on my deathbed.
Yep.
Okay? It changed everything. I'm 158 pounds now. I just finished a smoothie for dinner.
Mm.
Good for you.
The diet. The diet's so, so important. It's like, that is the first thing. If you're in any kind of health trouble whatsoever, that is the first thing you do before you ask any questions, before you even get off the couch. What am I eating? How can I improve my diet? It's pretty straightforward. And once you've got the good building blocks
of health in your body, it starts to repair everything.
Something that has been an ongoing, seems to be an ongoing message, Vinny, on the network, on multiple networks, actually, is this message, Vinny, and I'll tell you why I'm saying it now. Turn your TVs off. And I'm saying it for this reason. I ate when I watched television. If I was to turn the TV on now, my guess is, in short order, I would be eating again.
Yep, that's true. When you're sitting down there and you're watching 10,000 fast food commercials every year, watching 6 hours of television a day, you're damn skippy. You'll get a little bit hungry and start eating all that junk food too and start feeling bad and all the better for it. We'll be right back after the break.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure.
We are fire on top. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Baby. Do I want myself a psychiatric degree? Do you have any idea how many holidays to Fiji I could get just by shelling out poison pills to unsuspecting idiots and watching them all die brutally and kill each other? I mean, fabulous! That's basically what's going on here. I don't know. It makes me so angry and so sad and all of those negative emotions and all. It's that whole spectrum combined into this one topic of the pharmaceutical industry and the evil scumbaggery that they perpetrate. Sid is my caller and Dr. Anne Blake Tracy is my guest. And Dr. Tracy, I'd like to ask you one question that I try to ask all the guests, if I remember. We all kind of self-censor a little bit, and usually, even though we talk about some real far-out things, generally, there's still some stuff that we kind of bite our tongues about a little bit, and we don't mention them on the radio or TV or in public for one or the other reason, whether that be afraid of being judged or it simply just doesn't come up in the conversation, or whether it might be thought of as just a tad risque and you're trying to be diplomatic. So if there's anything you'd like to say to the listening audience that it wouldn't normally, here's the place to say it on the Vinny Eastwood Show.
That would probably be my shock in how many people become gay taking these drugs.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, possibly one of my worst cases, one of my very first cases was a doctor that had this happen. Went from a normal husband, family man, to having sex with men. And not far from that same area, this was down in Florida, just a few years ago, I got the worst report I've ever had. And that was a woman who was very familiar with my work, was listening at a neighborhood party in Palm Beach, where a wife was sitting there saying, I just don't understand what happened. We had a beautiful marriage, great sex life, and then just one day he takes off, goes to New York, has a sex change operation. I don't hear from him for a month or so. He comes back sobbing and crying about how he doesn't know why he did what he did. Then he disappears, and I haven't seen him since. You know, says I just don't understand any of this. And of course, the woman who was familiar with my work said, "Oh my gosh, he wasn't taking an antidepressant, was he?" And she said, "Well, yes, I thought he might need one, and he recently had started on one. Why?" Of course, then she got an earful. But, boy, that's a side effect you couldn't turn around.
Yeah, and it's such a taboo topic as well. Like
talk about living out a nightmare, huh? Definitely a taboo subject, but, you know, as long as I had seen it and briefly mentioned it in my book, there in, what was it, 2000, the scientists all got together. There were 2,000 scientists around the world saying, oh my gosh, there's so many of these drugs now. in the water supply that male fish are being born with ovaries. And they were talking more about antidepressants than anything else, and they do disrupt the endocrine system, which is what can cause that. So that would probably be the taboo subject. Nobody really wants to talk about that, but...
Hey, Doc, Vinny, may I interrupt a second?
Sure.
Go for your life.
Doc, may I ask a couple questions that you may find pertinent? I don't know. I understand that fish are being born not only with multiple sex organs or both sex organs, but are being born with their organs on the outside of their bodies,
which is a
so we're having all kinds of So this attack is on nature and it's multi-pronged. I don't think it's just pharmaceutical.
Oh, yeah.
Multi-pronged, yeah. No pun intended.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the whole world is being polluted by these chemicals. It's insane what we're doing.
What was like on the subject of sexual preferences? I mean, my gosh, Doc, they came out with a statistic here in America that 74% of all people here are obese now, or something of that sort?
Well, yeah, I know one of the first lectures I gave at the university, I mentioned that 60 to 70 pounds is average weight gain with Prozac, because that was early on when that was one of the first ones out, and someone in the audience hollered out, 180 for me.
Wouldn't that just kill all kinds of sexual appetite?
Well,
my guess is it would for most people.
Sure.
Nothing like seeing a naked 400 pounder, man. That just will take it all away.
Well, true. Yeah. And try carrying around, grab 10 different bags of potatoes and carry them around with you and see how you feel about having the energy level to do anything, too.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just talking about the mental side.
Yeah, that's true.
I wanted to talk about the sexual side as well, because this has come up with the what you said, the mixing of the sexes and the turning to homosexuality and strange things like that. Well, in terms of your health, having regular orgasms is incredibly healthy. So if your sexual appetite is turned off by a drug, you're not going to get any healthier by not having regular orgasms. They regulate the blood pressure and the breathing and all of this other really good stuff for you.
Yeah, there's the implications are just so far-reaching. I know I have people that read through my book and say, oh my gosh, I knew this was a problem. I had no idea how expensive it was. Because the number of side effects with Prozac alone, clear back in the early 90s, there were 575 side effects. So that'll give you some idea. I mean, we see diabetes, we see fibromyalgia. You almost lose your gallbladder in no time after being on these drugs, generally.
Doc, how does a doctor prescribe a medication with informed consent when there's 575 known side effects?
Good question.
You have the right to informed consent, but most people don't ask to be informed.
Well, that's a good point, but it's still informed consent falls on the doctor.
Yeah, they're supposed to, but they don't.
He's prescribing the medication.
You know, in all these years of specializing in these drugs, it has been extremely rare to run into a doctor who's ever even bothered to read a package insert.
Indeed, doctor. You just hit the nail on the head, because they get whispered in their ear every other patient by a medical professional selling drugs.
That's right.
Yeah. And isn't that society as a whole now? We're all walking around in this kind of great holographic matrix of stuff that's completely made up, that we completely don't understand whatsoever, but it's so easy to understand that all you had to do was pull out and read the package insert. Ah!
Yeah.
Well, you have to ask for it here, Vinny.
My interest was reading a package insert. I said, whoa, no wonder.
I ask for them. Please, may
you
I see it?
You have to. Because
yeah, they won't
use,
give them to you. Yeah, they won't give them to you.
They just hand you that little sheet that says, oh, you might be nauseous. You might have a little bit of insomnia. You know,
Doc,
and that's about it. They
Doc,
don't
when they, when,
give you
when
the
they,
sheet that says it all.
If I may, Doc, I'd like to just tell you, when they give pregnant, when they're trying to give pregnant ladies vaccines in my pharmacy, and I'm there, it tends to be I have to find a new pharmacy because I say, may I see the insert? I'm real loud about it to an obnoxious point because I can't stand it. It's a little baby that has no say-so.
I know.
And they're being killed or poisoned or both slowly. And it's not fair. And so yeah. I end up finding a new pharmacy. Thank God that there's a pharmacy on every corner here. I can't believe I just said that.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. I wonder, Sid, can it actually be termed as being obnoxious when you're trying to save babies from being killed? You know?
that's why I love your show, Vinny.
What's the yardstick on that one, I wonder? Oh, anyway, we'll come to the end of the show for this week. And Dr. Tracy, I would love to have you back on again sometime. You're just so lovely.
Well, now that we've got the phone down, we probably ought to do that. See if we can put a perfect show together next time.
Hey, Doc, the stuff that you're talking about is critical to people living. So it's real important that you spend the time and do this with Vinny.
I know it is.
Peace, Dr. Thank you.
Thanks, Sid, for your call, man. Very, very pleased to hear from you. And call in again sometime, man. And we do get regular callers on this show. I want to thank you all personally. And today we just received a donation for some equipment for an extra microphone. Thank you, Stitch, so much, bro. Love you to pieces. This means we'll actually be able to do some interviews in the studio as soon as I run out and grab that new microphone. I still need donations for a green screen, a new camera, and lights, and then we can basically make a TV show right here on the back deck of the house, man. We've got it all ready to go. I just need some equipment to get it all done. And Dr. Anne Blake Tracy's websites, ladies and gentlemen, would you be able to give them out, Dr. Tracy?
Drugawareness.org. Drugawareness.org. And then the database.
Drugawareness.org. Okay, drugawareness.org, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, Dr. Tracy, and we'll see you again sometime, folks.